Welcome back. It's a new week, and that means 1 week closer to the start of the college hoop season. Thank God you are listening to the CBSSports.com College Basketball Podcast. We are going senior blogger crazy today because I'm bringing on Eamon Brennan of ESPN.com. He's like the summer me, and I'm the winter him or something like that. We both run our respective blogs at ESPN.com and CBSSports.com. EB, thanks for coming on, man. How you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, man. What'd you do this weekend? What was going on out there in Chicago?
Not a whole lot. Hung out with some friends on Saturday. Took it easy the rest of the weekend. Pretty basic stuff. It was like abnormally nice for this time of year.
Yeah.
In Chicago, so we got outside a little bit and enjoyed it because it's, you know, it could very every weekend could be your last nice weekend. You got to take advantage of it whenever possible.
I hear that. I had a wedding to go to, and I was actually the best man for the first time ever, and the groom was the brother-in-law to be. I guess I'm marrying a woman, and her sister got married, and so I was the best man of the groom, and had never done a speech before. So I don't really get nervous in front of crowds, just not my thing. But I actually did get a little, I don't know, uneasy because the DJ threw it on me. Like immediately, like I thought, you know, they'd do the dance, everyone would sit, maybe get their appetizer or salad, and then he'd be like, okay, come on, you know, let's get the speeches ready. But they like were done their dance, and he's like, all right, dude, you're up. And I'm like, what? So I had to go up. I think I did okay. But have you ever had the best man responsibility? I got a few years on you here, so I don't know if weddings have really become an in vogue thing in your social circle yet, or if you've got a couple more years. But have you had to make that great speech at a nuptial party?
I have not, no. I've been in a couple weddings. I've been to a ton of weddings already. I'm 27, so my friends are slowly but surely dropping off one by one. But no, I've yet to be the best man, and that's fine by me. That seems like a lot of responsibility.
Yeah, it was, but it's okay. I enjoyed it. I was good. And the interesting thing about it is, so at the end of the night, there were a whole bunch of cousins that were there that were like, you know, 20 to 26 years old, and I'm 31, and I had like this awakening or this reality check, and we won't go too much into this, but I did want to share it before we get to actual college.
I was going to say, I mean, now that nobody's listening to the podcast anymore, we might want to talk about college basketball.
We will. But listen, you ever have like this moment where you're like, damn, I'm older than I thought I was? So I'm like up in the bar. It was at this like resort area, and there was a bar upstairs, and there were a whole bunch of people up there. But all of them were like, you know, basically 30 or older. And like all the vibrant young 24, 25, 26-year-olds weren't there, and I'm like, where are these people? And it turns out, like, and they were like a really affable group. They were like, you know, getting just wasted in the hotel rooms, like two floors down. And I was like, wow, we didn't even get the invite. That's it was quietly humbling. So I'm officially old, and I'm dealing with that as we speak. The depression is onsetting. So anyway, good wedding weekend, and now we head toward the season. Also, pump. We're both Bears fans. Bears play tonight against the Lions, and let's hope we get that win there. I'm a little nervous. I'm waiting for that 4-pick Jay Cutler game. It's coming.
It'll happen eventually. Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm just pleasantly surprised the Bears are as good as they are this season. I expected them to be like 9-7 at the outside, so it looks like they're going to easily eclipse that. So I'm fine. I just take it all as a bonus.
Yeah, well, knock on wood here. I mean, last year was looking pretty decent, then Cutler goes and snaps up his hand on that, you know, when he hit it against a helmet, and then Forte went down, so let's hope we dodge that. All right, let's go hoops. So you look at last week, you look at the news. We'll get some preview stuff, but I did want to deal with some immediate things. So Minnesota's, you know, a preseason top 25 team in a lot of people's eyes. I don't think they are, but a lot of people do think that they're worthy of that. So regardless of that, you got this Trevor Mbakwe situation. If you haven't really followed closely, Trevor Mbakwe is about, you know, my age at this point. He's had a very long college career due to off-court incidents and injuries and transfers and all sorts of stuff. And most recently, he had to go to court to basically figure out if he was going to have extended probation or actually face jail time and miss playing for Minnesota this season. He got lucky. He won't face jail time. It's a big ordeal. You know, Minnesota fans and Big Ten fans in general were keeping an eye on it just to see what was happening with that. So he dodges that at the end of last week, and you figure, okay, Minnesota in the clear. That's good. What is the one thing that Minnesota can't have happen? It can't have any sort of legal problems, you would think, from its players. And thank God it didn't. But what happens? The coach's son, who is an assistant, goes out and gets a DUI over the weekend. I mean, could you be more stupid, Eamon? Is Saul Smith arrested on suspicion of DUI Saturday night, blew twice the legal limit, and it's a total mess. He's on unpaid, I don't know what
you mean. Go-away time?
Yeah, go-away time suspension, whatever it is. Don't even probably think he should have the job. I mean, Kentucky fans long know the Saul Smith story. I mean, they hated him when he played there. I actually was a little bit of a Saul Smith defender, even though he was clearly not on that level of being worthy of starting for Kentucky at that time, but they didn't really have any other options. But what was your reaction when you saw the story? When did you see it? Because I almost didn't believe it. I thought it was straight out of the onion when I was first seeing it, and Parrish passed it along to me, and I was just gobsmacked. I mean, the worst possible situation there for Minnesota.
Yeah, it's not good, obviously. I wasn't totally blown away just because this stuff happens. People make bad decisions. You go out to dinner and you think you're okay to drive however many, few miles it is to go home, and you get pulled over and then you're in trouble. I don't know. I wasn't immediately blown away, but it is it's just embarrassing. I think the biggest thing to me about the Mbakwe situation, is not the individual things that he's done since he pled no contest in 2009 to that felony assault charge. It's this the specific things, leaving a Facebook message on your ex-girlfriend's wall on Christmas or whatever it was. Stupid, but not like I wrote, not the work of a criminal mastermind, blowing a point, 1-2 over the legal limit, but not by very much. And, probably was okay to drive home if we're being totally honest about it. But the idea that you would do those things when you're already on, probation, is really dumb. And the idea that sort of what the judge told Trevor Mbakwe, that he didn't have 9 lives, and that it's at some point, if you pile too many dumb things on top of each other, you go to jail. And I think that's sort of how I feel about the Saul Smith thing, too. It's taken in isolation. It's obviously a bad decision. You should be setting a better example than that. But he's not the first coach to drive drunk. He won't be the last. Sometimes it happens, and it's regrettable, and then you pay the penalty and you move on. But to have it happen just a couple days after a rather large and public situation for a DUI and probation hearing in Florida for the team star player, the whole thing is just kind of embarrassing. And for a guy like Tubby Smith, who I think Minnesota fans are increasingly skeptical of, I think it's bad timing, and it adds a layer of pressure to this season, because Minnesota fans, I think, are pretty convinced that they should be better than they are, and they might be right about that. They might be not. They might not be. Maybe every fan base tends to have an inflated view of its own program and where it stands in the larger college hoops continuum. But I think when you have a sort of mediocre program and you're not getting into the NCAA tournament with regularity, or you are but you're not doing much there, and everybody thinks you should be better than you are, even if you've been unlucky the way he has, I think it adds pressure, because if you're not going to be really good, if you're not going to live up to expectations, people at least want to be proud of the program. And when you've got your star player and your son, an assistant coach, getting caught driving drunk, then that's not going to be the case.
Yeah, Minnesota's had a lot of uneven news. I mean, even going back to, and we now know so much about who Royce White is and his mental condition. He has a lot of anxiety, doesn't like to fly. But, a few years ago, Royce White was making YouTube videos claiming he was done with basketball and his name would one day be cleared. And there just hasn't been a stretch where Minnesota's been in the news for exceedingly good things. They kind of are waiting, and maybe that's part of why the Gopher fan base is so eager to kind of be like, okay, are we going to win this year? If not, let's start clean, get a new coach in here. And I wonder if that'll happen. I wonder how many years Tubby Smith, because I wonder if Tubby Smith is like, all right, I'm after this, I'm done, but I don't know if he wants to be done, 8 months from now. It's a very interesting situation developing up there, and I think Minnesota should probably be a little better than what it is annually, maybe a little. But to me, it's always kind of been this nondescript Big Ten school. I actually think it's one of the very few schools in the country that you don't know if it's a football school or a basketball school. Like most schools, you can tell. It's one way or the other. Minnesota, I don't know which one it is.
And it's actually a hockey school.
That's true. That's a great point. It is. There you go. But between the other two, I don't know which way the needle leans. Maybe that's depending on a given year. Maybe that's why it's so mediocre in a big picture aspect from year to year, but kind of waiting for that program to have something big happen.
It's tough. Like Minneapolis is a great city. I think it's probably, you know, with the possible exception of Milwaukee, I think it's the best non-Chicago Midwestern like major city. Mm-hmm. Just in terms of it's a fun place. It has a great music culture and there's a lot of fun stuff to do there, but it's also freezing cold. I mean, it's horribly cold. And Minnesota doesn't have great facilities. The barn is kind of cool in a nostalgic sort of way, but it's not like blow a recruit's socks off cool. And there aren't great facilities outside of it. So it's a tough place to recruit to. And I think that Minnesota fans probably expect more. Whether they should or not is always up for debate. I mean, it's the same thing with like Illinois fans. You know, when they hired John Gross, there was this sort of outcry in Chicago, like, oh, this is the best we can do. We're a top 10 program. It's like, well, you haven't won a national title ever. So, you know, every fan base always has an inflated view of where their program should stand on, like I said, that you know, program continuum where they're ranked. And I think Minnesota's fans have a little bit of that. But at the same time, I do think, you know, they should probably rightly expect more, if not on the court, then off of it for sure.
All right, going from the Big Ten to the Big East, a minor headline that came out from over the weekend, and you blogged on it quickly this morning. Rick Pitino has put a muzzle on Shane Bohannon, a forward for the Cardinals, who will not be speaking to the media for the entirety of the fall semester. So I guess I don't know if that means, you know, after the Kentucky game he's good to talk. I don't know what's going to come from this. A couple rumors flying around as to why that might be. I'm not really privileged to kind of talk about that on the podcast. But so aside from that, aside from the reasons why, what's your response and opinion on a coach doing this specifically to a player? And take Louisville's circumstance into heart here. Top three preseason team. He's a good player. He's a player that actually didn't – I'm almost positive Pitino said he's the best recruit he's ever brought into a team since Mashburn. So when you take all that into effect and now he's not able to talk to the media for the rest of the semester, I mean, it's more of like a reporter problem, hashtag, or whatever you want to call it. But I'm always a little uneasy when a coach does this and the reasons aren't entirely clear. What about you?
Yeah, well, that's just – Part of college athletics. I mean, there's no reason for coaches to disclose why guys are being punished publicly. So then you hear rumors, but you're not going to report them. And a lot of times it is genuinely a sort of a privacy issue. And dudes are, you know, Shane Bohannon's what, 19? Like, I don't really need to know what incidents he was involved in that got him in trouble. I can take a reasonable guess, but I don't really care. The thing for me is it's just kind of interesting that I just thought it was interesting in general to punish a player by not being able to talk to the media, because a lot of players seem like they don't really like talking to the media in the first place. For him, I think Shane Bohannon does like talking to the media. I think it's, you know, part of what he enjoys about being a college basketball player. Maybe that's why it's part of his punishment. Maybe it's just a matter of trying to keep him out of the spotlight and keep him focused on hoops for the first couple months of the semester. But, you know, I don't really have a big time opinion one way or the other on it. Rick Pitino knows what he's doing. Shane Bohannon is going to be fine. They're going to be good. I'm not too worried about it.
You can follow Eamon on Twitter. I'm going to spell it out for you if you're happening to be listening at your computer right now and have Twitter up in a separate window. It's Eamonn. Brennan. Yes. That is
There's a lot of N's.
That is so many N's, man. You must be Irish. So as we look ahead at the season oncoming quicker and quicker, things that stand out to you aside from the obvious are what? I would indicate the obvious is the Kentucky, Indiana, Louisville triangle. So aside from those three teams, what are you eager to kind of see in the first month or so of the season?
Well, I think obviously the situation at UCLA is like the biggest preseason question out there right now, whether Shabazz Muhammad and Kyle Anderson are going to be eligible. They still don't know. The Los Angeles Times had a story Monday morning sort of updating the situation. And the update was basically there's not a whole lot to update. The lawyers for the players feel like they're out of the loop and they don't really know what's going on. It seems like that's the case for most people around that situation. And it's interesting because we're getting to a pretty late date here where maybe this will bleed into the season. And that not only, you know, any sort of punishment, suspensions, if that sort of stuff comes up, but just the sheer fact that we don't have a decision yet could bleed into the season, a la, you know, Renardo Sidney, where, I mean, people forget about that. But it basically took the NCAA an entire year when he was sitting on the bench for them to figure out what he needed to do to pay back, you know, the money he supposedly took during his amateur recruitment. So, I mean, does it just drag on into December and January? Because that, you know, that could be even worse than just not knowing, than knowing they're going to not be eligible, right? Like, I think that uncertainty would be the absolute worst case scenario for UCLA. And when you look at their team, that's obviously a team that could be really, really good if they get both of those guys eligible. And if not, could be, you know, better, but sort of mediocre. And I think that's the biggest sort of storyline I'm interested to see resolved before the season gets going here. I'm also kind of curious about the Pac-12 in general. I think the league in general will be a lot better. I think Arizona's a really intriguing team. I'm really interested to see how Mark Lyons plays in his last year, whether he's going to be, you know, the Mark Lyons we've come to know and love from Xavier, taking lots of bad shots and not getting along so well with teammates, or if he's going to be the leader that he's saying he's going to be. And the Big Ten in general, I think, is going to be a really, really tough conference. We talked about Minnesota, obviously. If you consider Minnesota a top 25 team, then the Big Ten theoretically has, like, you know, maybe 8 NCAA tournament teams. So it's going to be a really tough conference and really interesting because it's good at the top, but there's a lot of depth in there as well.
Big Ten best league in the country, you think?
Oh, yeah, I think hands down. Okay. I think hands down. I mean, I don't know any other league that – I mean, there are a couple other leagues that have, you know, a couple good teams. That, like, the Big East has Louisville at the top, and Syracuse is going to be good. I don't know, like, Notre Dame. And it's got, a couple of pretty solid teams, and Marquette, Cincinnati, and on down the line. But I don't think any league in the country has the combination of really good teams, like national title contenders at the top mixed with – good teams all the way throughout, down to like the 7th, 8th, 9th, you know, even 10th teams in the league. I mean, even like in the Big Ten, Iowa could very easily go to the NCAA tournament this year. I would not be surprised by that at all.
Really? Yeah. Okay. You're the first. I think you're the first that's really said that. I would be surprised. You're calling that though, huh?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I'm not saying it's going to happen.
Full disclosure, Eamon's from Iowa.
That's a total – well, yeah.
But I'm just joking with you, buddy.
I'm definitely not an Iowa homer. You can ask any of my buddies who went to Iowa. They say I rebelled against my childhood and stopped liking Iowa despite going to basketball camp and stuff there when I was a little kid. And they always give me a hard time about it. But, no, I think Iowa's going to be good. I think they have a style. Fran McCaffrey's instituted well. I think they've got some really interesting young players coming in from the state of Iowa, so that'll help get the fan base excited again. And I think, you know, they have a pretty plausible path to get to the NCAA tournament, especially considering last year they were so bad and they still sort of made an argument for themselves late down the stretch. I mean, they weren't ever going to get in the tournament unless they won the Big Ten Conference tournament, but they had some good wins down the stretch. I just think it's a team that's better than people think talent-wise and has a specific up-and-down sort of run-and-gun style that puts a lot of teams on their heels and I think will serve them well. I'm not calling an NCAA tournament. I'm just saying I wouldn't be surprised, and I think that in and of itself speaks to how strong the Big Ten is going to be this year.
Okay. Let's touch on players overall. You know, it's kind of – it's habit for a lot of writers to you know, you do all these preseason pieces and it's a lot of homework basically, which is homework I actually enjoy doing, but it's essentially homework because you want to refresh, make sure you are really on top of things and realize who has actually graduated, what coaches are no longer there. In my case, I wrote a hearty conference realignment piece that's still yet to post, and just keeping track of which schools are actually in which new leagues. But players specifically, you get an idea of who's coming back and might have enhanced roles. We put out our top 100 a few weeks ago, and within that, you know, as we were discussing that, there were a couple names brought up that I was like, oh, yeah, I didn't even consider him. He might have a pretty decent year. But is there one or two guys out there that, and they don't necessarily have to be breakout players or whatever like that, but maybe had a good year last year that you think should be a lot better, or we can go the other way. I mean, is there a player that you might expect to regress a little bit and maybe not be as good as people are expecting?
One regression player maybe might be Brock Modum from Washington State.
Okay.
And that's only because I think they're just, besides him, with sort of some of the defections they had this season, some of the dismissals this offseason, I think he could be seeing like triple teams every time Washington State plays. And he didn't have much going on helping him last season, but he'll might have even less this season. And he's a good player, and I think they'll rely on him a ton, but I don't know if he'll lead the Pac-12 in scoring again. And that's a statement about the Pac-12 as much as it is about Brock Modum, who, again, good player, but probably going to be facing a lot of double and triple teams this season if he doesn't have anyone to help him out. A couple guys people maybe aren't talking enough about. I think Trey Ziegler at Pitt is going to be a really solid player for the Panthers. And I think Steven Adams, too, at Pittsburgh. Like, really good recruit who, compared to some of the other guys that we've been talking about, you know, the Shabazz Muhammads and Kyle Andersons of the world, I don't think he has gotten, you know, even like guys like Caleb Tarzewski at Arizona and their recruiting class. I don't think we've talked about Steven Adams all that much, but he's a top, you know, top center prospect, apparently a really athletic, big, physical guy who, it sounds like his skill set, you know, he's not going to come in polished and, you know, putting through drop steps and all sorts of, you know, sort of refined post moves. But it sounds like he's going to get up and down the floor and block a lot of shots and dunk the basketball. And I think that's actually exactly what Pitt needs, because their defense last year was so mediocre. I think if he anchors them in the middle, they're always going to rebound well. And I think Pittsburgh could be a big-time surprise team this year for a lot of people.
Definitely intrigued by Adams, and they're two big men, both international. Him and then Prismemic Karnowski. I hope I'm not butchering that totally. He plays at Gonzaga.
Yeah.
I've heard really, really good things about him.
Every draft guy, like,
yeah.
That, like, he's like, I remember when he first signed at Gonzaga, I was like, wait, who is this dude? And, like, Jonathan Givney from Draft Express was like, oh, yeah, he's like an equivalent of like a McDonald's All-American. Like, this guy's, he's an NBA talent. I'm like, how have I never heard of this person?
Yeah. I'm just interested if he turns Gonzaga into a team that's a little bit tougher, because that's actually kind of been Gonzaga's thing, unfortunately. Kevin Pangos isn't scaring a 5-year-old off a preschool, you know, playground. I mean, he's not exactly the same for Stockton.
I'm going to tell him you said that.
Yeah.
He's going to come after
you. I love Pangos' game. Don't get me wrong. But like in like Sam Dower, kind of like a prototypical talented but somewhat soft Gonzaga tweener. And I like Elias Harris actually probably too much. So I just want to see if they get a little bit tougher. I actually picked Gonzaga to go to the Final Four. So Bulldog haters, back the F up. But we'll see. They intrigue me. I think I'm just falling for them again. Gonzaga is actually sneakily not as good in the tournament as a lot of people think. They've had a couple of decent runs, but they've had a lot of years where they haven't lived up to their seed expectations. So
right. I think they've basically flamed out in the first couple rounds of the tournament for the last, seven, eight seasons. So
I was trying to be a little softer with it, but yeah, by all means, get in there and throw a few punches. Yes.
No. I mean, I like Gonzaga a lot. I love that program. I love Mark Few. But yeah, you know, you're right. I mean, they really haven't gone too deep in the tournament recently. And you know, I don't know what that's attributable to. I think a lot of times it's just luck and small sample size, the same way like Kansas can win its conference tournament every year or its conference every season. And, you know, sometimes you get Farouk Manesh'd, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I know.
And sometimes you go to the Final Four and sometimes you win the title. But no, I mean, I like Gonzaga a lot this year. I don't know that they're like a top five, top 10 type team, which I know no one's ranking them there, but, I just think college basketball in general, if we're talking about main themes here, like we've discussed this in the past. I know I've discussed this with some of my colleagues, and Dana O'Neill has written about it already. But when you just sort of look out over the landscape, Indiana looks like a favorite. Louisville looks like a favorite. Kentucky, we'll see. I think they're going to be really good again just because they're always really good, and they're going to be, you know, one of the best defensive teams in the country because John Calipari's teams are almost always one of the best defensive teams in the country. But other than that, there's like 20 to 25 teams that are good and potentially really good that I could very easily see in the Final Four. And I think it's just so wide open this year compared to last season when we had sort of that hegemony at the top with, you know, big, strong programs with elite NBA talent and guys who didn't go pro for a variety of different reasons, most notably the lockout. Now, we're sort of cycling back to where we were, I think, a few years ago when you had a Final Four that was UConn, Kentucky, Butler, and VCU. I think we could very easily see something similar to that this year, if not, you know, the insanity of Butler, VCU meeting in the Final Four, but the sort of general wide open nature of the season leading us to a Final Four with like 2-4 seeds and a number 8 or something like that.
I enjoy that. I enjoy the unpredictable nature of a college basketball season like I think we'll have this year. But I also think, man, I do want to go back and look at, you know, these preseason prediction columns and expectations come early February, because I think we will have definitive tiers of teams. I think it'll be more than just Kentucky, Louisville, and Indiana, and one of those schools could easily drop out. I mean, I'm actually a little more down on Louisville than a lot of people, specifically Goodman, who is in love with this team. And I don't know why. Sometimes I just look at a team, and a lot of people pick them, and I just realize I'm against them, and it's totally arbitrary and stupid. But I guess that's what I am with Louisville. They'll be good. I just don't think Louisville's going to be – I just can't see Louisville being a consistently top 3 team throughout the course of the year. I think we'll have a few other teams jump up there. But Indiana I really like. And I want to give you the opportunity right now to talk about your alma mater, which also basically everyone thinks you hate. So you do a great job of really marketing yourself inadvertently as a hater, Eamon. Do you want to talk about Indiana at all, or do you just want to? I'm giving you the option. We can talk about them right now, or if you're so sick of it, we can totally bypass it.
I'm happy to talk about Indiana. It's always funny. I do try and I think it's a sign that I'm doing my job well if people can't tell that I went to Indiana, because I don't want, you know,
right.
So you don't want people to think you're in the bag for a team regardless of where you went or whatever. So I don't know, a couple of years ago, maybe it was when Etuan Moore and Juwan Johnson were still at Purdue. I wrote a couple of really things about positive about that team and about Matt Painter. And I had, you know, Indiana, like kids with indiana.edu addresses telling me I was a Purdue partisan, and I've had people think that I love Kentucky because I've written positively about Kentucky. It's like, what are you going to write negative about Kentucky? Like, they get every good player and they just won the national title. Like, you know what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
But anyway, no, I think Indiana's going to be really good. I think they have to get better on defense. I think it's very hard to win a national title. If their defense is like it was last year, even if they're the best offense in the country, which they very well could be, they are at some point someone will get them in the tournament. So this is not a secret. Tom Kareem right. knows this. Their whole team knows this. They have to get better at defense. And it's been a process. I mean, last year they were considerably better than they were in the years prior, not only because of personnel, but because they got legitimately better at defense too. They stopped fouling so frequently. They created a few more turnovers. They weren't so lenient in and around the rim, but more than anything, they stopped fouling. I mean, they were just horrible in that regard in Kareem's first few seasons at the school. They fixed that. I think the next step is to get that offense, or get that defense efficiency-wise somewhere up in the 20s, even if it's not a top 10 defense, which I think would be a lot to ask given that they ranked in the 60s last mm-hmm. year. Even if it's not a top 20 defense or not a top 10 defense, if it's in that 20-25 range and they have the, you know, fourth or fifth best offense in the country, I think they're going to be okay. But you know as well as I do that defense, it's cliche though it may be, defense wins in the NCAA tournament. It just does, because you go cold, you play in weird arenas, your sight lines are all screwed up, you get nervous. There are 5 or 6 different reasons why people go cold in the NCAA tournament. Sometimes it just happens randomly. Sometimes look at Florida against Louisville.
Yeah.
That first half, they made everything. And you're like, oh man, Florida, they cracked the Louisville code here. And then they went cold in the second half and Louisville clamped down, and that was that. So I think that Indiana has to get better on the defensive end if they're serious about winning a national title. Obviously, they are. I think they have a very good chance to do so. But a team with a mid-60s defense and a really good offense typically isn't going to get the job done in March when the game slows down and things start to get a little cold. And and you have to get stops. So that's the biggest thing for Indiana. I think they have personnel that they brought in that will help. I think Yogi Ferrell will be much better defensively at the point of attack than Jordan Hulls, who for all of his strengths shooting the basketball is a really, really big time defensive liability. I think, you know, it's not a mystery. I think, you know, Tom Crean realizes it. I think everybody on that team realizes it. And I think that's their biggest key to success this season.
Good deal. Again, you can follow Eamon on Twitter. EA. I'm not going to do it again.
It's just my name. It's just my name. Eamon Brennan.
It's quite simple. And you can read him on ESPN.com. He runs the College Basketball Nation blog and also has occasional enterprise pieces and features and stories. And also, are you going to be doing the podcast again this year? I want to plug it if you are, if you're going to be hosting that as well.
Yeah, you know, Andy and Seth have kicked us off already, for anybody who's listening has it in their feeds or whatever. And we are still sort of figuring out the schedule for when we get into the season here. But, yeah, the plan thus far is to have Dana and I doing a podcast this season, probably once a week. But we're still figuring it out, so no guarantees or promises in that regard. We'll see how it goes.
All right. Well, it was a good one last year, and we'll look for that later this year. So what are you doing tonight for TV appointment? I mean, we got a Game 7 NLCS. We got the Bears, and we had the debate. So what's your plan of attack here?
It's going to be tough. I'll probably not watch very much of the debate because without getting too far into politics, I know who I'm voting for. And, you know, as much as I enjoy the theater of American politics, I probably will be watching the Bears and baseball. I'll be rooting hard against the Cardinals to go to the World Series because, God, do I hate the Cardinals.
I know. They are filthy. They are the bird of Satan. And we will be much synergy from thousands of miles away, rooting for the Bears and against the Cardinals tonight. Should be a good one, though. It's pretty exciting for Monday to get all this stuff in. But, hey, man, thanks for coming on. Appreciate it. And I'll talk to you soon.
All right, dude. Anytime. Take care.
All right, cool. We'll be back Wednesday with Goodman Parrish. I have no idea what we're going to talk about, but I'm sure Parrish will hog most of the time. Thanks for listening. If you're not already, be sure to subscribe in iTunes, and we'll talk to you soon.